British People's League. British People's League. BritishPeople'sLeague.com. BritishPeople'sLeague.com. Our radio shows on air. Good day to you. It is February 20th, 2011. This is the second expose regarding Canada's secret civil war. First shots were fired December 26, 1978. Couldn't even say when the final shots were fired. Things petered out 1985-ish. I've had several emails, people curious as to how it all ended. Well, the fact is both sides just pulled back. Neither side totally victorious. I feel that we were perhaps the more disappointed side because we didn't quite achieve the administrative regime, the administrative governmental setup that was desired by the old guard. You really will have to follow the shows in sequence to tie it all in. Frankly, I just don't have the time to sort out the flow of events in a nice, easy flow chart for you listeners. Perhaps I should. I just don't have time. I have a day job, much correspondence from emails, and two shows a week. So as said in the first show, which was broadcast, the first expose of Canada's secret civil war on February the 16th, just this past Wednesday, as stated then, if you wish to follow up and find the proof of what Beatty is saying here, John Beatty, spokesperson for the British People's League, spokesperson for the Advisory Council of the British People's League, if you wish to follow up to ascertain the veracity, the truthfulness, go for it. There were so many events over those years, so much intrigue. It really sounds more like a spy novel than reality. I'm only a human, and to have all of the sequence right up to a T, it would almost be impossible for me. I'd have to give up everything else. Well, I've got bills to pay, just like everyone else. I can't give up more time on my day job, unfortunately. What I'm leading up to with this preamble, I am going to give you the highlights on these shows, the exposés coming up for as long as it takes. May take weeks, may take months. Some of the things I'll say, you'll just shake your heads and say, impossible. Beatty either drinks too much coffee, too much beer, or whatever. Well, those who were involved will know the truth. Now, what's the point in revitalizing all of these thoughts of the people that have passed on during Canada's secret civil war? Well, for one thing, it's to show a lot of younger people who have just discovered white patriotism. They're a little bit leery of Tamil boat landings and being pushed out of jobs for non-whites to prove that the old guard, the old Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Celtic establishment did not take it all lying down. Particularly a segment of retired policemen from the Beaches area of Toronto. They were quite a core of loyal patriots. And they flew in to the Laurentians in Quebec, December 26, 1978, to have a little talk with René Lévesque. It's part of Canadian history. Ironically, around the Western world, there's this time period where they put secret material away for 30 years or so. Well, the irony is, it's just pure fluke, but it has been over 30 years ago since the first shots were fired December 26, 1978. You get the odd hesitation because the dates are swarming around me, but if I was to actually have it all in book format, I probably wouldn't need to be reading it out over these broadcasts as such. The broadcasts are also going to assist me in putting it all down on paper. But I invite anyone out there on the planet, you're most welcome to tape record, do whatever you will with these broadcasts. Perhaps you'll come out with a book sooner than I will. There are going to be slips. Events that I refer to absolutely, totally took place, or I wouldn't be talking about on air. But I am guilty of making minor slips. So I'm going to make a couple of corrections after the very first expose. We talked last week about the Codafone machine that was out in the 70s through leasing companies that you could attach to your telephone and do a miniature broadcast. I had said that we will put the Codafone message about the desperation in Rhodesia at the time on air. Well, I do have the tape, the original tape broadcast from 61 Kingsmount Park Road in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, not 67-ish. An incorrect address was given out on the first show. The actual address for the broadcast from the Codafone messages was 61 Kingsmount Park Road in Toronto. Now, the other slight correction, well, it's out on the date a fair bit, to do with Roman Catholic Archbishop Carter's comment of Toronto, the heading in the Toronto Star, the date of the Toronto Star edition was actually March 27th, 1979. Quote, there is a backlash in preparation. If you are not aware of it, I don't know where you live. End of quote. Let's get that again. There is a backlash in preparation. If you are not aware of it, I don't know where you live. End of quote. Roman Catholic Archbishop Carter of Toronto. Ironically, during a lot of the Civil War period, Archbishop Carter was a guest in none other than Conrad Black's home. Dear old Conrad Black, the international shyster, locked up down in the States. There's more to dear old Conrad than meets the eye. How he ever got his funding to start his empire. The widows of two former financiers, MacDougall and Colonel Phillips, two financiers back in the early 60s, late 50s. When those two financiers passed on, Conrad Black conned the widows into multi-million dollar shares as gifts or whatever. That's where Conrad started off his great career, conning two widows out of their inheritance. But it is kind of cute. During a lot of the Civil War period, Archbishop Cardinal Carter was a guest at Conrad Black's mansion out in Bayview area, exclusive district, of course, again in the Toronto, Ontario, Canada area. The camps, as said last week, liberal hierarchy, the Trudeau power mob, versus our old Anglo-Saxons, our old Anglo-Celt, Anglo-European. People came up from the United States to assist to form a new administration in Canada. People came in from Britain. I witnessed people who were obviously emotionally upset during a lot of the stuff that went on. During the dead of night stuff, people were wearing almost military-style blue shirts with a Union Jack on the left shoulder, almost as a shoulder patch. And during those early sessions, we can refer to all kinds of goodies. January 1979, Pierre Trudeau, headline, Canada sitting on powder keg. Pierre cranks up the tension level. Sunday Sun, December 31st, 1978. You sounded the alarm. There's Pierre hiding out in Jamaica under the excuse of a meeting. And I said last week, I really think you have to listen to the shows in sequence. It's only 20 minutes a shot, so it's no big deal. You've got comments like September 8th, 1978, Globe and Mail. Soldiers of the Governor General, heavens. And here's an old guy named McClure, used to be, of course, with the liberal establishment. He said, I don't think the Queen should be involved in directing our army. She hasn't from time immemorial, and if she tried, there'd be a revolution. So you could say, well, so what, Beattie? These are just little comments here and there. But as said on the first show, when pieced together. Now let's talk about August 14th, 1978, Prince Philip's plane having trouble heading back to the motherland. He was returning from the Commonwealth Games in Edmonton. Trouble began at Calgary Airport Saturday night when the pilot of an Air Canada 747 jetliner carrying the prince and 370 other passengers aborted takeoff after a warning light flashed in the cockpit. After this fault was checked by engineers, a second takeoff was aborted when four tires burst. All four tires? Okay, now we're going to jump again. We're going to, now what was it Cardinal Carter said? There is a backlash building. August 2nd, 1978, weapons ban sought for pair. Lindsay, Ontario. Police will seek a court order today to prevent two Ottawa men from owning weapons following a raid on a Lindsay area farmhouse that netted enough guns and explosives to equip a mini army. Isn't that interesting? Two Ottawa men. Both Anglo-Saxons. They were students at Sir Sanford Fleming Community College. Very interesting. Police said the seized items include rifles, handmade explosive devices, military-like uniforms, and warfare manuals. Provincial police launched an investigation last January, assisted by the RCMP, several police departments, and the armed forces. Strict curbs on weapons suspect. After hearing testimony from one witness, Fraser's lawyer, Dan Chilcott of Ottawa, requested was granted a ban on the publication of evidence. So you can look this up, Toronto Sun, Thursday, August 3rd, 1978. Quite the story. And they look like almost middle-class types. So let's just say things were in preparation. And again, Gary Dunsford, Toronto Sun, December 28th, 1978. 25 words or less. Robert Cormier tells me they're closing down René Lévesque until after the holidays. Seems a team of French chimney sweeps is coming in to clean out the premier's nose. Picture of René, and underneath, René Lévesque in for a sweep. Fine and dandy. Small little tidbits. Will you piece them all together? And it just gets better and better. I'm going to jump around with dates. On March 25th, the Canadian Armed Forces occupied Cherry Beach Harbor in Toronto with submachine guns in an internal security exercise against an imaginary invading army. See Toronto Sun, Toronto Star, March 26th, 1979. So the purpose of all of this would have been a new administration in Canada that was pro the good old days. Keep our constitution as it was, not change our criminal code, not allow homosexuality out in the open. The days that people in my age bracket in their 60s well remember, when things were good in this country. We've got so much to tell you week after week after week. Take Alexander Haig, you know, the big boy with the Nixon, and then with Ronald Reagan. Well, Haig was up here several times. Some of you who follow politics might have been curious why Alexander Haig was up in Toronto, the former top NATO commander. Well, he turned traitor on our people. He was involved. Yes, he was. As I said, my registered nurse passed away wife. She was a charge nurse at the Wellesley Hospital. There used to be meetings of those in our camp at the Wellesley Hospital, and from there my wife would report to me. Alexander Haig, former top NATO commander, he turned traitor for bucks. you click in Alexander Haig and Google and come up with some wild stuff. This guy, after the Tiananmen Square massacre of students, of Chinese students, those who follow politics, remember Tiananmen Square, after all the students were slaughtered, thousands of them slaughtered by tanks, so what's Haig do? He stood with the Chinese generals and the Chinese head honcho on the review platform after the slaughter with the top Chinese, and the premier of China land turned to him and said on the platform, "You are a very brave man, Mr. Haig." Well, of course, that's in reference to the fact that the Western world would crucify Haig if they knew that he was there. Well, it wasn't even reported in the public press. And what's the reward for little Alex turning traitor on our peoples? Dear little Alex received millions in business contracts from the Chinese, private business contracts for his bank account as a result of him standing with the Chinese killers. When he died recently in Florida, his home, his estate was valued around $14 million. And it was kind of cute during the middle of the Civil War that was going on. Haig's making money out of it on the side. He found time to make a speech in Israel for $25,000 speaking fee, right in the middle of the Civil War stuff up here, while others fought in the dead of night and died for Canada. Other Americans, British Americans, did die on our soil trying to assist for freedom in Canada. So here's Haig gets $25,000 for making a speech in Israel. And the only paper that tipped us off as to the $25,000 was the old, what you call, rightist paper from the Deep South, The Truth at Last. Someone spotted this out of the blue. It wasn't in the public press. Our Patriot volunteers did not receive a dime in compensation during the lengthy Civil War. And the line was very simple. If Beatty gets nothing, neither does anyone else. And anyone involved could see that the Beatty family lived next to poverty, having three young children. What can be done once legally can be done again legally. These exposés are meant to prove, of course, to those who think that Beatty has given up or God knows what. Nope, we're still here. We're fighting. Just a slight diversion on the Shelley Ann Clark, the whistleblower over the crooked free trade agreements. Look up her blog. Google Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y, Ann, Clark, C-L-A-R-K, blog. That's all you have to Google. Shelley Ann Clark blog. And you'll see a couple of postings made by yours truly. February 20th. John Beatty on that blog. Not sure what the statute of limitations would say, but surely the crooked brass that ordered the duplicity during the free trade talks should be hauled before the criminal courts. Second posting yesterday on the Shelley Ann Clark blog. Those with big bucks who are truly concerned about our country being stolen must come forth with gifts to patriots who are willing to do more. First absolute must is that those patriots on the front line, such as Shelley Ann Clark, must be able to travel coast to coast on our ever-growing whistleblowers crusade. Patriots from coast to coast must at least meet face to face in building our legal resistance. Frankly, we are in the position of the Dutch underground during World War II. We have been tricked and hoodwinked into the loss of our nation to third world invaders, while the manipulators literally meet in their castle in France, etc., etc. You think I can come up with fantasy land? Bob Rae, the former Premier of Ontario, now a Liberal boy in Ottawa, was in one of the society pages. He meets with the Rothschilds in their castle in France. Yeah, the working man's Bobby Rae, whose father passed away. Saul was a powerful Ottawa man. So we're just touching lightly today, and I did tell you about a story about a guy named Fred, August 25th, 1980. Check out McLean's magazine. Rich boy named Fred double-crossed the enemy camp. Okay, we've run out of time already. Second expose, February 20th, now endeth. Tune in every Wednesday and Sunday for more exposés on Canada's secret civil war. Thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you.